This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 15th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 360. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, David Eby's NDP government has compromised the policing of BC's forests. Former forestry investigator and conservation officer Bryce Cassavant joins me to explain what's behind General Order No. 5. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. On the way to BC's October 19th election, David Eby's NDP government issued a secret order to the province's Forestry Policing Service. In a nutshell, it says, "Do not investigate government wrongdoing." We know about it because of Bryce Cassavant, a former forestry investigator and conservation officer. He exposed what is called General Order No. 5 for theconversation.com. Bryce Cassavant lectures at Royal Roads University's School of Humanitarian Studies about legal aspects of environmental management. Bryce Cassavant is my guest on this edition of the podcast. Most recently, Bryce has authored for theconversation.com a feature investigation called "Do Not Investigate: The Hobbling of the BC Forestry Policing Service Sets a Troubling Precedent." And it's about problems inside the compliance and enforcement branch, which is essentially BC's forestry police. Bryce, what did you find out and what needs to be solved with this BC forestry police and how it is funded and operated?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Bob. I think this recent forestry issue does tie into the broader issue that I've been looking at for about 10 years now on the constabulary authorities of environmental policing services more broadly. And there's essentially two in the province of BC. One is the BC Conservation Officers Service, which I think is fairly well known. We can talk about that in a moment. The other less known but arguably more powerful organization is the Compliance and Enforcement Branch of the Ministry of Forests. Now I think they're in Walrus. The ministries seem to change names every now and then. But for the purposes of this conversation, we'll just refer to it as a Ministry of Forests. Which is the historical term that's been used. And they're not essentially a policing service. They are a policing service. They are appointed under the Police Act, these officers. They are mandated to investigate forest crime and also non-compliances relating to heritage conservation, water laws, wildfire is another big one. They are BC's premier environmental policing agency. And one of the key functions that they've historically performed for almost 100 years now has been the investigation of government non-compliances, or we could call for your listeners internal affairs of illegal government activity. That is no longer the case. They have been shut down and mandated not to look at government. And those documents are what that feature piece explore and expose.
Forests are valuable for so many reasons. First of all, first and foremost, for the environment, for our ecosystems. There is also the economic side of forests.
Well, the intersection you've just described is very, very real and matters to the lives of British Columbians, whether you're a forester, whether you're a logger, whether you're an NGO activist or a member of the public. It really doesn't matter. The intersection you've just described does affect a broad range of not just social interests, but economic and conservation interests from a wide swath of the public in BC. It used to be that the environmental policing services in this province stood separate from the executive branch. They acted independently, and they were sort of the watcher on the wall that would be able to hold not just industry and individual members of the public to account, but also the government itself. They were able to put some teeth into the legislation so that the compliance requirements of not just not just forest conservation, but logging operations and things like that, which the government is also involved in through BC Timber Sales. They were able to apply the legislation equally without fear or favor to government or industry or the public. They were an independent agency, and that's no longer the case. And the issue that I see is an extreme overreach of the Attorney General's office in influencing the directives to the policing services to essentially shut them down in their abilities to investigate government non-compliances and perform internal auditing functions of government activities in the forest sector. And not only are the officers more correctly under, if there is going to be any government influence, the Solicitor General Policing Services Branch, the Attorney General should have no involvement in the policing areas whatsoever. But that inappropriate area, which needs to be corrected, also is extremely problematic when we do look at things like Ferry Creek, when we do look at things like the Wet'suwet'en protests, the use of state force and violence to arrest citizens, to remove civil liberties, and things along this line, when the state itself may not be acting lawfully, and there's no ability of policing services to balance out the needs between civil liberties and the enforcement of not just conservation objectives, but the general constitutional frameworks in this country, which is what the rule of law is supposed to be there for. It's what our polices are supposed to be, and it's fracturing. It's broken now, and it's broken because the AG's office is overstepped.
Now, you got a leak of what's known as General Order Number 5 that says, quote, pursuing enforcement action against government bodies creates a legal risk for government, and it is an inefficient use of resources that should be allocated to other high-priority legislative investigations, end quote. That the government is not wanting to hold itself accountable, and this also happens in an election year.
Yeah, it's not a good look. I am, just as a researcher, as a writer myself, I'm quite, and as a former officer, I'm quite shocked that language like this would be included in a general order. I'm not a legal expert, but I would venture to say if I was still in the service, that one of the first calls I'd be making is to the executive branch, saying this is an unlawful order. It's not going to be followed. You know, I don't know what's happening internally right now, but it should be rescinded. If there's any ounce of integrity left in this government and administration, this order should be rescinded immediately. It's highly inappropriate. It's beyond fettering. It's a corrupt act that needs to be corrected and should be corrected.
So what were the comments from the government and the comments from the RCMP?
Yeah, good. This is a really good question. So one of the things that I didn't know was, you know, has another organization been tasked to fulfill this gap? You know, are the provincial services being stood down from looking at government because maybe, I don't know, some have gone over to the RCMP and there's another unit taking over? So I wanted to make sure that the factual thrust of the article was correct. And so I simply called the RCMP division headquarters, and I scheduled up a series of interviews with their media liaison and also their counterparts in Alberta. And one of the things that came out is not only did General Order Number 5 come out for our provincial forest services, but while that was happening, or just prior to it, I should say, the RCMP Forest Crimes Unit was also shut down. So the only other organization that would have been able to look at government noncompliances from either a provincial violation or a criminal code aspect and investigate government corruption or purported or alleged illegal government activity was the RCMP Forest Crimes Unit. Well, they took care of that one too. They shut that one down first and then curtailed the provincial policing services right on the heels of it within about 18 months of each other. So we've got a system which has been completely co-opted, and its inherent purpose of transparency and independent enforcement of rules and regulations in our forest sector has been completely shattered.
Another move the NDP government made, they actually announced that September 9th, Environment Minister George Heyman, who is not running for re-election, but he's still very much involved in the NDP's campaign war room, he announced what he called a, quote, new partnership with the Grizzly Bear Foundation. The government news release says, reducing human wildlife conflicts and enhancing well-being of grizzly and black bears in BC. Last year, 603 black bears and 23 grizzly bears were killed by conservation officers. The first 6 months of 2024, more than 150 more black bears. The other methods that used to be employed, such as relocation, tranquilizing relocation, really have not been prioritized. Now, the NDP has been in power since July 2017, and they're doing this so close to the election, which is October 19th. What are your thoughts? What's your reaction to this move?
Well, this feeds back to my opening comment about the two environmental agencies, the policing agencies in British Columbia, one being the Forest Service, which is having its struggles with General Order Number 5, as I've explored. And then the other is the BC Conservation Officer Service, which I've written on now for about 10 years. And but they are tied together from the perspective of policing. Both agencies have appointments under the Police Act, and both agencies should be operating independently of the executive branch of government. That is what police forces are mandated to do, at least in our jurisprudence and common law here in Canada. And so what we're seeing with announcements like this about partner is a continual erosion of the understanding of what it is to be independent as a constable, as a constabulary service. It's this muddling of and meddling of minister's office in constabulary affairs, which is highly inappropriate. And whether you look at General Order Number 5, or whether you look at and I'm not trying to take anything away from people's desire to do conservation and animal protection and things along this line, and to focus on the conflict, community conflict reduction with wildlife and things like that. I'm not trying to take that away, but at the core of the issue is the independence of the constabulary. And at the core of this issue is continually meddling. This particular administration has really got its fingers into the constabulary pie in a way that's not appropriate. And I don't think you would see announcements like, well, first of all, you wouldn't see General Order Number 5 in other jurisdictions, but you also wouldn't see announcements like this. If you read the government news release, it does talk about contracting out oversight and things like this for constabulary services, and this is highly inappropriate. And so we continue to at least I do, beat my head against the wall on some very, very basic concepts of what the constabulary is, of how our rules and regulations and public policy is structured in this province to have an independent constabulary and policing service. And it's just not landing. This government just does not care.
Do you think, though, that the NDP government should have earlier in its earlier mandate, which started in July 2017, shouldn't it have looked at the human wildlife conflicts and found a scientific way to try to reduce those and try to work with or advise the Conservation Officer Service on new methods instead of waiting until the numbers piled up and public pressure piled up? And it became a political football, essentially, and then make this announcement like this. It does look like meddling now, but it could have looked like proper evidence-based decision making and consultation earlier on if they'd done it way back in 2017 or 2018.
Yes, and I think is not only that, but all the tools and even the legislative tools for that matter to actually address some of these issues do currently exist. They're just not used or enforced. And so we're trying to, in my view, similar to General Order Number 5, is we keep trying to reinvent the wheel when I don't know that that's necessary. I think we do have the ability to work with some of the tools we have. We just don't, and or at least not yet. So we'll see where this goes. It is frustrating that Bill 17 did, which I called for very, very heavily, wrote the conservation officer service out of Bill 17. That was despite the recommendations made by the all-party committee that was reviewing the Police Act. That was despite the recommendations that I myself made as an expert witness to the legislature during those proceedings, and others have called for as well. And the strategic direction of the administration to not include the Conservation Officer Service in Bill 17 was a purposeful move. And it's essentially the legislative structure is allowing police officers, provincial constables, fully armed, fully appointed, to be under the direction, the sole direction of a ministry that does not have a police agency designated in the Police Act. So you essentially have a bit of a private army that you can wield around. And it's not supposed to be that way. That's not how our legislation is structured. And this is probably one of the key areas that needs to be corrected sooner than later.
And we are on the cusp of the provincial election, officially begins September 21st with the writs. Which questions should voters be asking of their candidates on the way to October 19th?
Well, I mean, there's the age old, I can't remember if it was the Nixon campaign or where it came from. My U.S. history is a little off now, but the old saying, you only have to ask yourself, is your life better off now than it was 4 years ago? And so, I mean, that's the question in everyone's mind. I think it's a fair question. And people are looking for I feel this tension, the social tension and the kind of fracturing of societies around the world. And I think people are looking for a difference and a change. For myself, I'm following the Surrey Police transition very closely. I'll be doing interviews again next week. I'll be in the Lower Mainland doing some interviews with the new service. And how this is going to be responding to different, as a relatively new and agency that has the ability to modernize quickly because it is so new. I'm following that very closely. I hope that that water's under the bridge and the people can start receiving people of Surrey can start receiving the policing and emergency services that they desperately need. And then on a broader scale, these changes in state enforcement agencies and how they're going to shift with whatever administration comes next in BC, and whether those administrations, try to seize more power through the interference and meddling in constabulary affairs, or whether we are going to correct that model and bring back constabulary independence and the ability to operate as policing services in a way that is truly serving the public, not just those in power that have desires during election times. I am watching the electoral office very closely. As you're aware, in 2020, there was the emergency orders that were issued, and I had a bit of a foray. There was an emergency order issued by the chief electoral officer, which essentially, in my view, resulted in a historically low election turnout, voter turnout. And I did receive those years ago a written response back that the analysis I performed on that emergency order was correct. There were errors within the order, but the election was still held valid despite the order. Despite the order containing a very serious error, it quoted the wrong law for the validity of the order. It purported to issue an order relating to voting stations under a wrong piece of legislation. It's very, very serious from a democratic standpoint. And in my view, the results that were affected by that order should have been declared invalid, and there should have been voter should have been provided an opportunity to reattend the voting stations. But the person who issued the order ended up reviewing their own order and saying, "I'm just not going to do anything with it." And I found that quite shocking. And so I'm watching very closely the general provisions of democracy and the use of powers and authority during electoral times is a personal interest of mine.
Thanks again, Bryce Cassavant, Former BC conservation officer, Afghanistan war vet, and he lectures at Royal Roads University in legal aspects of environmental management. And go find his investigation on theconversation.com. It's Do Not Investigate. The hobbling of the BC Forestry Policing Service sets a troubling precedent.
Thanks, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, pro-Russia hackers crashed Taiwan Stock Exchange website. No Name 05716 also hits Shangshan Airport and government offices. The hackers launched cyber attacks on some websites in Taiwan. In a tweet, the group claimed this was because President Lai Ching-te had suggested China, quote, take away Russia's land in the Far East, end quote. In ABC News Australia, Australia sends expert teams to Fiji as Chinese state-backed hackers attack Pacific Islands Forum. The cyber attack, detected in February, was extensive, and the hackers intended to gather information about the operations of the Secretariat, according to sources. Experts say Pacific Island governments are undergoing rapid digital transformations, but cybersecurity measures aren't keeping up. In Kyoto News, Japan ruling party leadership race begins with record 9 candidates. Japan's ruling Liberal Democratic Party is choosing a leader to succeed Fumio Kishida as prime minister. The leadership election on September 27th will be held without the outright influence of intra-party groups at the center of the money scandal. That, and the unusually wide field of candidates, boosts the likelihood that the vote will be split. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In Willamette Week, Secretary of State directs Elections Division to open investigation into candidate donation swapping. Levon Griffin-Vallad asked for the investigation 6 days after Willamette Week first reported that candidates had agreed to swap donations. At least 11 candidates running for city council agreed in writing to make reciprocal donations to one another in an effort to unlock public financing. The city's small donor elections program provided $40,000 in matching taxpayer funds to city council candidates that received donations from 250 individual donors by August 27th. In Crosscut, D.B. Cooper's parachute to be on display at Tacoma Museum. It's the first time in a decade that the parachute has been on display. It is one of the most requested items in the Washington State History Museum's collection. It will be on display until March. The infamous hijacking took place on November 24, 1971, on a Northwest Orient 727 airliner between Portland and Seattle. And read these stories in the Breaker.News. Stanley Park logging budget grows to $18 million after a secret city council meeting. And, despite the power to act, EB lacks political will to get to the bottom of North Shore sewage plant scandal, says Fontaine. Read these stories and more at thebreaker.news. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The virtual Nanaimo Bar. Brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Terry Fox Foundation and everyone involved in the 2024 Terry Fox Run on September 15th. Whether you're running, walking, or rolling, whether you're donating a dollar or a thousand, you're helping get one big step closer to Terry's dream of beating cancer forever. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 15th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 15th of September in 1971, the crew of the Greenpeace set sail from Vancouver to protest an underground nuclear weapons test in Alaska? And on the 15th of September in 2008, Wall Street's Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy protection. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News on X, formerly Twitter, for news as it happens. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.